The store opens at midnight, that's right, midnight, to sell copies of the latest Guns N' Roses release. About 24 people are out there waiting. It's the group's first album in 4 years. Guns N' Roses has stirred up a storm of controversy, mostly because of the legal troubles of lead singer Axl Rose. He started a riot at a St. Louis concert and made the news for speeding in California. Guns N' Roses is actually releasing 2 separate albums. Fans describe their music like
pretty
this.
Hard rock. I mean,
power, man. Emotional impact.
They came out and were like a breath of fresh air.
The albums go on sale at midnight. The price, $15 each. Tower Records says it will stay open until 2 a.m. for anyone who is a fan of the group or maybe just has a case of insomnia and can't get to sleep.
Yeah.
Boy, okay. I was worried, but looks like we'll be able to get over there after the show after
Good.
All.
Good. We'll be there.
Yeah.
With their debut album, Appetite for Destruction, and its follow-up EP, GNR Lies, 2 records that have sold more than 12 million copies, Guns N' Roses established itself as a band apparently capable of doing anything it set its collective mind to. Now hard at work on a long-awaited second LP, due out in January, with former Cult drummer Matt Sorum recruited to replace the departed Steven Adler, Axl Rose took a couple of hours off recently to talk to us at the house in the Hollywood Hills he shares with his wife Erin, a place so new they had to buy lawn chairs for this backyard interview, which went like this.
You had mentioned that you had some goals for this record. I mean, you guys are in a position where you're like, you're the hard rock band in the country, if probably not the world. Where do you go next? I mean, what are you trying to demonstrate?
There's lots of kinds of material. Basically, with all kinds of different reactions in the press and this and that, it was kind of like the only way to show where we've been and to make ourselves happy was to just try to put it all out. Try to put all the material out at once, which, you know, 148 minutes, that hasn't really been done. I mean, Springsteen put out a 5-album box set, but it was live. You know, it had been done over the years. Most of this is new material, and there's a couple cover tunes in it.
Well, how come Steven left the band at this critical juncture?
Steven didn't leave the band.
Or how come you and
Steven was fired?
That goes for all you punks in the press that want to start shit by printing lines instead of the things we said. That means you, Andy Sesher, Hit Parader, Circus Magazine, Mick Wall at Kerrang, Bob Guccione Jr. at Spin. What, you pissed off because your dad gets more pussy than you? Fuck you! Suck my fucking dick! You be ripping off the fucking kids while they be paying their hard-earned money to read about the bands they want to know about? Printing lies, starting controversy, you want to antagonize me? Antagonize me, motherfucker! Get in the ring, motherfucker, and I'll kick your bitchy little ass!
Hello, you're listening to Rock and or Roll. I'm BJ, and I am finally joined again by frequent guest, co-host of certain episodes, Brian Sword from The Double Stop. Hey, Brian.
Hey, buddy. How's it going, man? Been a long time.
Yeah. It's good to talk to you again. So we're together today to talk about the best of the Illusions, the sprawling Use Your Illusions albums in quotes. I'll put the word albums in quotes.
Yeah.
For these,
when these albums came out, I was so excited for new Guns N' Roses that I was ready to accept anything.
Yeah.
And I kind of did, because I was happy with them. I thought they were great, and there was so much, and it was awesome. And then, you know, they kind of stopped getting spins for me. I still always would listen to Appetite, but Use Your Illusion kind of stopped listening to it. So going back to it, I hadn't listened to it in years, and I'll say that it was hard to find 5 songs that I thought were awesome. You know, I found a couple that I thought were awesome, but the last, like the 5th choice, I could have chose from 6 songs. That was a tough one to land on one, because it was like, yeah, I thought there was 4 awesome songs out of both albums, and, you know, 6 good songs, and then a whole bunch of stuff I hated. So it has not aged well for me, but I have some songs here that all in all I can stand behind.
Yeah, I honestly, I really never was much of a Guns N' Roses fan. never really, when these came out, I didn't care. I mean, it was interesting. Wow. It was such like a cultural phenomenon that when they came out, I didn't buy them. My friend had them, and wow. I picked out a few songs that I liked at the time, but I was never a big Appetite for Destruction fan at all. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Guns N' Roses are one of the most overrated bands ever in history, you know, from my point of view. I never really quite got it, what was so great about them.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
Well, yeah, like I said, these don't even count as albums. So this is a band that really only ever had one album, which is kind of crazy how legendary they are and everything. And that's all based on just one record for the most part, you know.
I would say one record is definitely a classic, and then there are a handful of songs off these two, which is one big one, that I think there is a few that may make it into the Guns N' Roses classic side, but certainly not the albums themselves.
Yeah, to me the Use Your Illusions are basically like collections of outtakes and B-sides. That's what they feel like. You know, it's a as a band, you don't release every single song that you even attempt to write or record all at
exactly.
once. Yeah,
exactly. That's what they did here.
Yeah.
And if you've read any of the autobiographies, and you probably not because you don't seem like a fan, but I've read all of them. Duff's is by far the best. The band was an absolute disaster zone when they made these records. It's yeah. actually kind of a miracle they were made at all, because they were all, you know, in their own way, out of their freaking minds. Like, it was a disaster, this band, at this point. Like, we're talking full-blown, like, crackheads, you know? Like, some of the members. They were a mess.
Yeah, and you can hear on these albums that Axl Rose was just an egomaniacal, just, you know, overbearing, just obnoxious motherfucker when they were making these. He must have been unbearable to even be around, I think. You know, he was just like, I get so annoyed like when I listen to like Izzy's songs and then Axl inserts himself like way higher in the mix than anything else.
Oh, yeah.
And just
yeah.
like there's so many songs where he's just scatting, and it's like he was in the studio all by himself just layering shit over everybody else's songs. And I can imagine Izzy hearing what Axl put on some of his songs and just being so annoyed. I could just imagine it.
I guarantee you that's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
That the band did their parts, and then Axl came in and spent a couple of months and just, you know, went mad scientist all over it all.
Yeah.
For good or for bad.
Yeah. But yeah, these are literally just like a brain dump of just everything. Let's say all our old songs we didn't use already, and just yeah. any random fucking thing we recorded, just screwing around in the studio and just throw it all out on two CDs that are just full almost to like maximum capacity.
Yeah. And put on like Don't Cry on both and just change yeah. the lyrics a bit. And, you know, just, yeah. like, you know, this has been a thing for ages since this came out, is this whole making one good album out of these two.
Yeah.
And you know what? I think there is one good album, one good 10 song album of the whatever it is, 35 songs or whatever it is that are on here. There's a good album of 10 songs. And frankly, if they would have done that, history would be kinder to these albums, I think.
For sure. And then they would have had a bunch of outtakes and B-sides, you know, that they could have used like any normal band would have done. Instead yeah. of
or
just
when,
throwing it all on, you know, these two CDs and calling them albums.
Yeah. Or, you know, instead of doing Spaghetti Incident, which was horrible.
Yeah.
Just doing a B-sides album or something after things really fell apart that they could get new product out.
Yeah. I mean, this was more than 4 years after Appetite that these came out, which is a long, especially then, you know, that could have been four more albums. You know, bands are releasing an album a year. At least every 2 years.
Every 2 years. You know, we're talking 70s, early 80s, it was every year. By late 80s, early 90s, it was probably an average of every 2 years.
But even if you made one album out of this, it's still not going to sound cohesive. It's not going to sound like a full band. You're still going to have songs, you know, these songs that just are basically Izzy Stradlin solo songs. and you've got a couple of maybe one or two Duff solo songs, and you've just got Axl just doing bullshit, and it would have sounded like, you know, they were all working separately and then had Slash, you know, work his magic. But
I love how this is the best of episode. That's fantastic.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, why don't you jump into some of the history? I think you're probably ready to rock on that, aren't you?
Yeah, I guess I don't have a ton more on the history. You know, I mean, of course, one of the biggest things about this is Steven Adler was out of the band, and mm-hmm. and Matt Sorum was in, and I don't know, you know, there's lots of different opinions on Steven Adler's talent and how talented he was, but obviously that band had a great deal of chemistry that even switching out one member is going to change.
Huge change. And Steven Adler deserves a lot of credit because the whole band changed because Matt Sorum is very rigid.
Yeah.
It's almost like a drum machine at times. And that business with Axl had him do that one drum fill in many songs. That was Axl's idea because it was like this theme to go throughout the album. You know, it's that next level thinking that always ruins a project because it was a terrible idea because there's that one da 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 fill that's all over the album. And it just sounds like repetitive and stupid. Like he's only got one fill in his pocket. But Steven Adler had a swing in his drumming, and that swing elevated the songs. It doesn't matter that if he was the best technical drummer. No, he's not like Neil Peart, but he had a swing in his playing that worked for that band. And it's such a huge difference from the first record to this record to hear the different drumming. And it's just not as good. Like Steven Adler is essential for Guns N' Roses. Much more credit deserved than he gets.
Yeah, and Matt Sorum, you're talking about a hired gun, like studio musician, basically, which is kind of, in a way, the worst thing to put into a band like Guns N' Roses. With Steven Adler, you had all the heart and the personality, and, you know, so there was so much more to it than just his drumming, even as him as a member of the band. I mean, that was Guns N' Roses, and then you stick Matt Sorum in, he doesn't look right. He's not right, really, in any way for the band.
Oh, absolutely.
So it's just it was a very odd choice. I guess he was in the Cult and they toured with the Cult and that's how they knew him. But, you know, he was, even in the Cult, he was just a hired gun. You know, he wasn't, I don't know how long he was in the band, but I don't think it was very long. He just, you know, made the rounds. And it was just a very odd choice. I don't know how, that was probably just it was probably just all up to Axl at that point, I guess. And maybe Axl could control him.
Yeah, I don't know. I've heard some stories on that. I forget who it was. Somebody went and saw the Cult. I think it might have been Slash. Went and saw the Cult and thought he was awesome and brought him to the band. So I don't know what it was about him that made it work, whether it was personality or something. But, or maybe they just wanted more of a power drummer. But
yeah.
Yeah, I don't really think he fit right.
No, not at all. That was like one of their very first tours was opening for the Cult, probably way back in like 87. Yeah, so,
but yeah, that might have been it.
That's cool.
It was a Sonic Temple
back.
Tour.
Yeah. So, I mean, what they're doing here, you know, going back to that time, Guns N' Roses could not have been bigger. Like, basically as big as any band ever got, really.
Yeah.
And so they're following up just this gigantic, hugely impactful debut.
Huge record.
Yeah. And just, yeah. And bigger than anybody could have even imagined. And so obviously they could have put out anything at any time and it would have sold millions and millions of copies. And the fact that they take 4 years and then just release this insane amount of just, you know, schizophrenic music. I mean, it was a big deal at the time, and the videos were on MTV constantly. And, you know, if you look at these as albums, man, it's a disaster. it's a real mess of calling these records. It's nuts.
But that said, each album went 7 times platinum. It was nominated for a Grammy Award. You know, as of now, 18 million copies worldwide. like it was still a success, even if artistically maybe it wasn't, but in terms of sales, still a massive success.
Yeah, it was a big success. I think they were expecting bigger. I think if they would have released a more coherent album in 89, it would have sold even more, probably, especially if they had their shit together. But yeah, you know, MTV November Rain was just, you know, on constantly and was just it was a huge deal. And that was another, you know, they were so indulgent in those videos too, so self-indulgent and ridiculous with their videos, and how much money was spent on those videos. It was just nuts.
Absolutely. I through my some of my interviews on my own show, I've kind of sorted out a little bit of the producer side from talking to other people. I've not had Mike Klink on, but I've had other guys. And so Mike Klink was working with Megadeth on the Extinction album when he got the call from Guns N' Roses. So he up and left Guns N' Roses. Up and left Megadeth, I mean, and just walked away from the project and went back to Guns N' Roses.
Really?
Because, you know, yeah, to work with them again. So that left Max Norman, who was also working with him on the project. And then they brought in Dave Jordan, who is Alice in Chains' producer. And there was a personality clash between him and Dave Mustaine. So Dave one day said, you know what? There's too many Daves in this room, and fired Dave Jordan, leaving Max Norman alone, which is why Max Norman got the sole producing credit on it, because he carried on what Mike Klink had started. I think he had to re-record a bunch of stuff and did that record. But it was pretty funny for me to have Mike Klink working with Megadeth, who was another big band at that time, and just be like, yep, gotta go, Axl called, and just walked away.
Yeah. Yeah, Axl Rose, you know, by 1991, he had just turned into this maniac. he was just a maniac. And he's one of those guys that it really, really went to his head, you know, all the success.
Well, he's also got psychological issues.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean?
Definitely.
He's bipolar or something.
Yeah.
So, because he was never into drugs. He was, I think he smoked a little weed is what I read in one of the books, but he was like not a drug guy. Everybody else was out of their minds and he wasn't, but he just kind of went crazy from that level of success. You know, he did kind of lose it. And yeah, I think he was, you know, probably one of the most difficult people to work with you can imagine at that point.
Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah.
I saw Guns N' Roses on this tour, on the Illusions tour. And it was, I think it was near the end of the tour. It was in Hamilton, Ontario, and it was the classic Guns N' Roses show where show went great. You know, we probably got about three quarters of it, and then something happened, and Axl Rose was like, fuck this, threw down his mic and stormed off. And then Duff went to Duff, who was just barely able to stand, he was so out of it, went to the microphone and mumbled out the rest of the lyrics, and they, you know, crawled off stage and the lights came on and the show was over. But it was, you know, it was a good hour and a half into the show, so it was like, we got enough. You know, so yeah. There wasn't a riot or anything, but it was still like the classic, hey, I got to see Axl Rose freak out and storm off, cool, you know.
Yeah, there must have came a point where people were hoping that would happen, because that was part of seeing a Guns N' Roses show.
Yeah.
That they would be 2 hours late, and exactly. Then Axl would get pissed about something at some point.
And storm off, you know? So you didn't get the full Guns N' Roses experience unless Axl stormed off.
Yeah.
Stop! Camera. An interpreter. Do you think camera on this fucker?
Una cámara en esto, por favor.
Do you think that this is funny?
¿Ustedes creen que esto es gracioso?
If you see somebody beside you,
si ustedes ven a alguien al lado suyo,
throwing something,
tirando algo.
Beat the fucking shit out of them.
Péguenle.
All they are going to do,
todo lo que van a hacer,
is rip every one of you off.
Es golpearlos.
If one of us gets hit by something like this,
si alguien le cae eso encima,
or if I see someone in the crowd get hit by someone, something like this,
si él ve a alguien que tira a otra persona una cosa como esta,
unfortunately, the show will be over. Well, thanks to the lame-ass security, I'm going home.
We're out of here.
All right, well, my number five pick of my best of the Use Your Illusions albums is a song written by Izzy Stradlin called Double Talk and Jive, which the whole song basically is the riff. Yeah. It's just a fun riff. This is not a great song. I don't love this song, but you know, that which shows that even my number five is not. This is one of them that always kind of stood out that I just was kind of liked.
I have this song on one of my lists.
Ah, perfect. It's not much of a song. I don't know. It's a riff, and you know, Izzy, there's this effect on Izzy's vocals, and then, like I was talking about, you've got Axel, like way high in the mix, just like taking over the song and going like, man, all this stupid shit. I mean, Axel, he tries his best to ruin the song, really, is what he does. But
he accomplishes it.
But it's got this like film noir vibe. It's got this weird, like, dark kind of vibe. It like tells a story, kind of, you know, you get this character that Izzy's, well, I guess it's not a character. It seems like a drug deal going down or something, you know, which, yeah, I guess there was plenty of that going on in real life. Probably.
If you consider that song to be one of the five best songs in an album with like 35 songs, in trouble, folks, because that's a terrible song.
Well, I wouldn't say best, you know, these are my favorites, you know.
I had to walk the line too, in all fairness, because some of them are radio killed so bad I couldn't bring myself to do it. But I tried to get over that on the other ones and try to, you know, do a bit of a balance of deeper cuts and the hits. So anyway,
yeah, you know,
carry on with your description of a horrible song that you actually like.
Yeah, this is one of the songs that I actually would listen to when these first came out, when my friend had them. And, you know, I think I just taped a few of the songs from him or something like that. I was still in high school when this came out.
Me too.
And yeah, so there, I just had like a few of the songs on a tape or something. And this one, I always, this is one that I know better.
Okay, so as I said earlier, I have a total of 6 songs that I could put here. This pick was of the best of and the worst of list. This was my hardest pick because I had 4 songs that I really like on this 2 album package. Then I have 6 songs that are like, yeah, they're pretty good. You know, they got a pass. So trying to pick the number 5 was very, very tough for me. And I changed my mind a bunch of times. Then I just got tired of it and I just made one because I got sick and tired of making this list. So I was trying to be very careful to have some deep cuts as well on this list. I didn't want it just to have, you know, the 5 classic hit songs off this record. So I chose a song called Dead Horse. It was written by Axl. I like this song because it reminds me of old Guns. And frankly, it probably is an old Guns N' Roses song. But it reminded me of something that could have been on GNR Lies. So just the fact that it actually sounded like classic Guns N' Roses was enough for it to get the nod to get on my list.
Yeah, that's funny because that was on my other list.
Yeah. There you go. This is going to be a fun one, folks.
Yeah.
I have a feeling my number 4 is probably on your bad list, too. That's going to be great.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, that last song, the title is like self-descriptive of the song. It's beating a dead horse with that thing.
Sick of this life. Not that you care. I'm not the only one with whom these feelings I share. Nobody understands quite why we're here. We're searching for answers that never appear. But maybe if I looked real hard, I'd see you trying to understand this life that we're all going through.
Then when she said she was gonna like wreck my car,
my number 4 is another Izzy Stradlin song, and of 14 Years, which kind of sounds ridiculously similar to Dust and Bones. Those two songs are almost interchangeable. Mm-hmm. I like both, but they sound so similar. But I guess I like 14 Years a little bit more. Once again, fucking Axl. It's hilarious how high in the mix he is when it's supposed to be background. He takes the background vocals and puts them in front of everything else. It's hilarious.
Totally.
Oh my God. I could only imagine being Izzy Stradlin and hearing this. And then probably there's no way that he can say anything or do anything about it. Like,
no.
It would just, you know, if he said one word, Axl would probably destroy the studio and then would cost the band like $100,000 to,
I agree,
to fix the mixing deck or whatever. So he just had to live with it. You know, Axl just layers himself over the top and he just has to deal with it. So I guess it's no surprise that Izzy ended up being out of the band soon after this. And I like Izzy Stradlin's solo albums. So this is a precursor to that, yeah. I guess. It's got that 70s kind of sound, like, you know, he would go more in like the Faces, Rolling Stones kind of direction. Mm-hmm. And yep. So
yeah, this song gets a pass for me too. This one was on my list of songs that could have been my number five.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a
I
good
even
song.
Like the piano here. I even like the piano, and for the most part I hate the piano on this album, but yeah. Even in this song I actually think the piano works.
But you know, it doesn't sound anything like a Guns N' Roses song. What makes no sense about these albums is they're just so random and there's like no cohesive. These albums never feel like a band, you know,
no.
With the camaraderie no. and like the communal, like creative, you know, no. input, and that's just not in existence on these. So,
absolutely, I agree. Okay, let's see. My number four, another Izzy song called Yesterdays. It was Izzy and then Axel as well. I don't know what it is about this song. I've always liked it. Much like, you know, 14 Years. I don't think it's probably a great song. I just find it really catchy. And it's one of those ones that I can listen to and enjoy. So I don't know. Maybe that's the Izzy influence, but I actually think it's a good song. I just don't think it's like, oh, this many songs, and Yesterday's is my number four best song. Shows that this is a pretty weak slate of songs, but yeah. I do like the song.
There's so many songs in this album that are just like, nah, you know, there's a lot.
Yeah.
But I gravitate more towards the ones that are heavier. Those I kind of like more than a song like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's plenty of like the heavier songs like Back Off Bitch or Bad Apple. I mean, they're not really any good. But for one thing,
heavy.
For a lot of them, Slash... I love Slash. I think Slash is fucking great.
Yeah, me
and
too.
So he could save a lot of those songs just with his riffs and his licks and his tone. Yeah. I just really like, you know, Slash is great on these records for the most part. So
it's a miracle considering he was a crackhead.
At the time. Yeah.
But I hear people say he's overrated, and I think they're out of their minds.
Yeah, I hear that too.
He's got such, he may not be like the world's greatest shredder, but man, that guy can write a guitar solo. Like, they do not sound improvised. They sound like he wrote them, which is, you know, such a great thing. Like, so many guitar players like George Lynch or whatnot, they're amazing and they do great solos and they're known for their solos, but they improvise it. And then every now and then there'll be like Tooth and Nail or something where he admits he actually wrote it. And it's like so far superior than the stuff that he just ad-libbed. Like Zach Wilde's the same way. Ozzy always, in the early days, Ozzy made him write guitar solos and he always wanted to just improvise. And that's what he does now. And they're nowhere near as good as they were when they wrote them. And Slash writes guitar solos. And that's why they're so memorable. And you can hum them because they're composed. You know, they're not just off the top of his head. Sorry, went on a rant.
No, yeah, I completely agree. Slash is one of those guys where when you hear the guitar, you know it's him.
Exactly.
There's not a lot of guys like that. And he does that. I don't think he uses effects. I think he just plugs his guitar into an amp, and he's just got, I don't know if it's in the fingers, like they say, or whatever, but he's just got his tone. And, you know, this sounds, one thing about these albums that sounds like Appetite is Slash's guitar still sounds... still sounds like Guns N' Roses. That's the one thing on here that really still sounds like Guns N' Roses.
Musically, yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's why when like Chinese Democracy or whatnot, it just didn't sound like anything other than an Axl solo record.
Yeah.
Because you didn't have the distinctive tone of Slash.
Yeah, his licks and his riffs and his solos and everything. I'm a fan of it all. I think he's great.
Too.
So
I think he's brilliant.
Yeah. All right, I guess we're to number three. My number three is, you know, it was, well, I guess it was technically the first single. It was one of three songs from this album that came out before the album, but this was like and it was on the Terminator 2 soundtrack, but it only came out, it seemed like it was longer to me, but I guess it was only a couple of months before the albums came out that You Could Be Mine. I thought it was a lot longer than that. Like,
no, I don't think so.
No, it wasn't, but like in my memory, it seemed like it had been out for quite a while. But I mean, obviously, it was a huge deal when the song came out, when the video was on MTV. This was like the new Guns N' Roses song. And, you know, technically, I guess it was the first single, even though Civil War and what was the other song that had been out over a year before? Knocking on Heaven's Door, I guess.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
yeah, those two had been out for over a year before these records. But
really, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Knocking on Heaven's Door was on the Days of Thunder soundtrack in June of 90, and Civil War was released in July of 1990. So,
wow.
Those have been out a long time.
Interesting.
But, yeah, Civil War was like the first new Guns N' Roses written song, you know, it's post like the whole Appetite GNR Lies thing.
Yeah. And that's the one song that had Steven Adler on drums because
of
that.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, You Could Be Mine. It's funny. This is number three on my list, but I've never been like a huge fan of the song. I mean, it's all right. It's awesome riffs. Like we were just raving about Slash, and it's true. You know, Slash is awesome on the song. I don't think it's an amazing chorus. I like the verse melody. I like the verse more than the chorus. The verse is really cool. But yeah, I mean, I don't love the song, and you know, I've heard it so many times that it's kind of ridiculous, but it's a cool song.
I agree.
I guess it's really only my top two that I'm really a big fan of. The others are just like, yeah, they're cool, but it was hard to place You Could Be Mine on my list just because when it's a song that you've heard so many times, it's just hard to, yeah.
Okay, well, my number three, shockingly, is a song from Terminator 2 called You Could Be Mine.
Yeah.
This is the one song that I like the drumming on.
right.
on this album.
Yeah.
I guess outside of...
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah, I didn't think about that, but yeah.
It's the one song where it's just like killer drumming. Wow. You know, amazing, because I generally hate the drumming on this album. I think it helps that it's associated to me with T2, because I just love that movie and I love this song. You know, and I remember when it came out, like, I was so pumped when the video came on. I'm like, this kick-ass rocking Guns N' Roses song. It's like, ah, oh, they're back, you know? And little did I know I was in for a letdown when the albums came out. Even though, as I said at the time, I kind of ate them up. I just kind of drank the Kool-Aid on them. But yeah, I think this song's great. And Slash kicks ass. You know, amazingly, it was written by Axel and Izzy. It sounds to me like a song that would have been Slash would have been a writer on, but he wasn't. This song kicks ass to me. You know, I think I probably like it more than you do. But this is, I like, you know, there's my top three are songs that I genuinely love, and this is one of them.
I love the verse. The verse is killer. The chorus is a little bit flat. You know, it's not as great as the verse. Just the way the riffs and the vocals on the verses are awesome. And Axel's attitude and everything.
Oh, yeah. Like, this to me is like classic Guns N' Roses with, it's an evolution off Appetite. And I thought we were in for, like, just an unbelievable album when I heard this.
Yeah. All right, so that was both for number three. So my number two, now this song I love, and it's totally epic, and the musical arrangement of the song is just incredible. I think it was only written by Axel. The song is Estranged. The vocal melody is incredible, and this song is very ambitious, but it's not pretend. I don't feel like it's pretentious at all, like November Rain is. But I think the best part of the song is the arrangement and the playing. The vocals, we get a lot of nasal Axel. On these records, you get phlegmy Axel and you get nasal Axel. You get a lot of annoying shit. But this one, there's none of the phlegmy Axel, I don't think. There's some nasal, but then he has some quiet parts where he actually tones it down, which Axel toning it down on these albums is very rare. There's so much scatting and double tracking and just ridiculous shit he does. So he, you know, thankfully on this song, he doesn't do anything that's overbearing, but just musically that's what to me is so great about the song is musically. It's amazing. I just think it's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it definitely stands out as, you know, one of the crowning achievements on these records to me. And Axel wrote it himself. So, you know, kudos to him for
kind
that.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah.
When you're talking to yourself and nobody's home,
Hey, hey, hey.
Okay, my number two, you probably hate. In fact, I'm sure you hate it. Written by Axl, November Rain. Now, I know it's a little over the top, but I think it's classic for a reason. I think it's been radio killed so bad that it's hard to look at it for what it is, but I think it's a pretty brilliant song. And again, I'm amazed that Axl wrote it by himself. But I admit that the guitar solo in this song is so unbelievably great that it really...
Yeah.
As a music guy, that, you know, that solo is so brilliant that it gets on my list just for the solo alone. But I think the song is great. I absolutely, again, this is one of those songs with that fucking repetitive drum fill that I hate, that was peppered out throughout the album. I hate that idea of one, you know, one fill all in all these songs. It's such a dumb idea. But I think the song is great, and it's super ambitious and super catchy. Like, I know it's been radio killed, but if you can look past that and see it for what it is, I think it's a pretty genius song. Again, written solely by Axl.
I don't hate the song, but I think it's hard to separate it from Axl's personality, especially by this time. So that's why it kind of feels pretentious and also a little bit kind of hokey, or I don't know what.
I agree on you on that one. I think it's pretty much perfect.
Yeah. See, I think Estranged is way better than that. But you know, I read Tracy Guns claims that Axl had November Rain all the way back to like 1983. And it's on those Rumbo tapes, I think. The demos from before Appetite. And I also read that in 1988 on some Australian thing, compilation thing, a version of that song came out back in 88.
There's a version on the Appetite for Destruction box set that just came out.
Okay.
And I heard it was like an early recording, and it was kind of there, but it wasn't. And that's what they had said, is that he had this song for a long time, but it just wasn't ready. Appetite. It just wasn't fully formed. And that's how it sounded in the version that I heard, the early version. It's kind of there for the most part, but it just wasn't fully baked.
Yeah.
And by the time they did this one a few years later, they had it together. Even though, man, a song would have been so much better with Steven Adler on drums.
Yeah.
I have a feeling your number one song is going to be on my worst of list.
Oh, really? You think so?
Because I'm like, what else could? What else is left? Except maybe, what's it called? That first song that came out, Civil War, which I didn't have on my list at all. I'm very curious to what your number one is.
Well, you know, Really Estranged should probably be my number one, but the one that's always kind of been my favorite from these albums is Don't Damn Me. I love the riff. I just love the riff. I usually am not a huge fan of songs where the vocal melody just echoes the riff, which is what Axl does on this song, and Axl is phlegmy on this song. But I just think the riff is so great that I've always liked the song a lot. It's stood out to me from the beginning as kind of my favorite from the albums. I don't know why it was my favorite, but I just always liked it. Yeah. So Don't Damn Me is just my personal favorite from these. You know, it's just the first one I think of, you know, if I'm thinking of what's my favorite song from the Use Your Illusions.
Huh. That's like not on any of my lists. It's not on my standbys. It's like that song is, I don't hate it, don't love it,
yeah.
Don't even like it. It's just nothing to me. Wow, I'm genuinely surprised. I thought you were going to go with Civil War because I'm like, neither of us have mentioned it. But, okay. Wow, I'm surprised because that to me is just a throwaway track.
Please, if I can't get point of view, could you turn the other cheek?
but musically, composition wise, Estranged to me is the best thing. Is the best thing on these, in my opinion. But
okay, well, there we go. So my number one was probably my easiest choice in my good and my bad list. It was so easy for me to go like, oh, that's the best song on the album. Written by Axl, my number one song is called Estranged.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
easily my favorite song on here. And it's, again, it's one of those songs that Axl wrote and / elevated.
Yeah,
man, the guitar playing on this is just perfection. It's so good. But to me, it's just without a doubt, the first song that comes to my head when I think of these two albums is Estranged, is like just the best. It's a time where all this ambition, they were trying to evolve and grow and have this ambition, at least on some of their songs. And this is one of the ones where it came together the most. I must admit, it's a big surprise to me that I think the best two songs on these albums were written solely by Axl.
Yeah.
I never would have thought that until we did this exercise. Estranged is just brilliant. It's perfect. Like, so easy for me to call this the best song on the two albums.
It really is brilliant. Yeah. I'm so like, glad you agree.
Shame on you for having it number two, dude.
No, yeah. Well, that's the difference between best and favorite, you know?
Well, for me, it's both. It is the best and it's my favorite.
Yeah, so we're going to close out these episodes. We decided to close out these episodes by picking the best and worst songs, or favorite and least favorite songs from Appetite for Destruction. So what's your favorite song from Appetite?
Well, my favorite song, again, easily favorite song, on an album full of classic songs, I chose a song that wasn't even a single. I chose Mr. Brownstone. That's always been my favorite song on this album. That riff to me is unbelievably great, and I love the drumming. It's from the day I got the album to today, this to me is a standout track. I cannot believe it wasn't a single. Written, I think, by Izzy, but his days being a drug dealer or something. But Mr. Brownstone for me is like easily the best song on this record, in terms of being my favorite anyway.
Yeah, that's, like I said, I was never a huge fan of Appetite, and not really sure why. I've never really been able to understand why everybody else loved it so much. Like, I remember when Welcome to the Jungle first came out, and I didn't like it. I never liked it, so I don't know. Mr. Brownstone is all right. Yeah, it is weird. I've never got into that record very much, though. But yeah, it's funny how there's songs on that album. That's one of those albums where even the songs that weren't singles are almost like everybody knows them, like Night Train.
Oh, yeah.
And all these songs that are, they're kind of like classic songs, even though they were never even singles. It's
weird. Absolutely. Yeah. And they were played on the radio, even though they weren't singles. And, yeah, you know, you heard them, just heard them everywhere.
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
Well, yeah, this was easy for me, too. My favorite is Sweet Child of Mine. I just love it. And it goes back to Slash. You know,
yeah.
But I think the melody is amazing on that song too. The lyrics are ridiculous. The lyrics are so bad, but melodically, I love it. Yeah. I love the song. The musical arrangement and the guitar work are brilliant, I think. And also the vocal melody is really great. And the arrangement, the different parts, I think it's just an absolute classic. And
it
for
is.
Sure,
and even the bass playing on it's great.
Oh yeah, everything about it for sure, except the lyrics. The lyrics are dumb as shit, but otherwise, it's easily my favorite song from there for sure. And it's one of those songs I'll never be sick of that song. I don't think, like, I love it every time I hear it in the grocery store or whatever. You know, anytime it comes on, it's one of those.
Whatever.
I mean, how many times in your life have you heard that fucking song? But I'll never be sick of it though. It's so catchy and great. So, all right. So that's the best of the Use Your Illusions episodes. Thanks very much for joining me, Brian, to talk about the best of these sprawling.
You know, it is albums. Always a treat to be on your show, my friend.